This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Oh, we're meeting at the courthouse at 8 o'clock tonight. You just come in the door and take the first turn to the right. Be careful when you get there. We'd hate to be bereft, but we're taking down the names of everybody turning left. Oh, we're the John Birch Society.
50 years ago this week, the John Birch Society was founded by a wealthy candy manufacturer named Robert Welch. A staunch conservative and early contributor to William F. Buckley's National Review magazine, Welch remained scared long after the Red Scare of the 1950s subsided. Here he is in a video in 1965.
We have voluntarily joined together to combat more effectively the evil forces which now threaten our freedom, our lives, our country, and our civilization. So, of course, we collided with communism.
He was particularly obsessed with the idea that there really was an immediate, perilous communist threat to the United States.
Alan Lichtman is professor of history at American University. Lichtman says that Welch organized the Birchers in defense of America itself, which they believed was at grave risk.
Not from dupes, not from fellow travelers, not from liberals, but from card-carrying communists directed from Moscow.
And he called this society the John Birch Society. Who was John Birch?
John Birch was a Christian missionary in China who was killed by the communist Chinese. Robert Welch regarded him as a martyr. Indeed, the first victim, Welch said, of World War III, which he believed had begun at the end of World War II, and of course was the great confrontation between freedom and communism. Interestingly, though, another conservative, the commander in China, General Albert Wiedemeyer, wrote to Welch and said, you know, John Birch was actually killed by his own follies and is not an appropriate person for your society. But Welch, who didn't listen to anyone but himself, ignored what Wiedemeyer had to say.
It's also a bit awkward once you've announced your martyr to change martyrs midstream. Now, you have noted that in the first two or so years of its existence, the John Birch Society was operating pretty much under the radar, at least under the press's radar.
Well, it's absolutely fascinating. The John Birch Society is formed in late 1958, and it goes so unnoticed that there's virtually for 2 years not a single article written in the major newspapers about the John Birch Society. Then in 1961, the floodgates open and many hundreds of articles appear in the mainstream media. What happened? Several things. First, there was the leakage of an earlier work that Welch had written himself called The Politician, in which he called former President Eisenhower a conscious agent of the communist conspiracy. That spectacular charge propelled Welch and his society into prominence.
Not a dupe, not naive, but essentially on the payroll. That was the charge.
Indeed, a real live communist in effect. And even President Kennedy, in late 1961, at a fundraiser, gave a major speech calling the nation's attention to the peril posed by extremist organizations like the John Birch Society.
So by the time John F. Kennedy is raising his warning, the John Birch Society is marginal, but suddenly famously marginal. Everybody knew who the John Birch Society was.
So notorious that a 1964 poll found 65% name recognition for the John Birch Society. Extraordinary number. Also, that same poll revealed by a ratio of 12 to 1 that Americans would likely oppose a candidate supported by the John Birch Society. However, the John Birch Society had real influence. First of all, because it raised in 1964 about $1.7 million, big money for an organization at the time, and it used this money to build up local networks of supporters all over America. It hired paid organizers at the grassroots level and attracted many volunteer organizers.
I don't know if the Birch Society was famous or infamous, but it was synonymous, at least in the popular culture in the early to mid-60s, as kind of poster child for paranoia.
And I was feeling sad and kind of blue. I didn't know what I was gonna do. The communists were coming around. They were in the air, they were on the ground, they were all over. So I ran down most hurriedly and joined the John Birch Society. I got me a secret membership card, went back to my backyard, and started looking.
And that was the prevailing view, that this was a bunch of paranoid nuts who had this fantastic idea, not only that Eisenhower was a communist, but that American society, up to 40% of it, was riddled with card-carrying communists, that the civil rights movement was a communist plot against America, that aid to education was organized by the communists. And so indeed, the prevailing view was that this was paranoia in the extreme, utterly unhinged from the reality of America in the early 1960s. Americans believed, of course, that there was a communist threat, but they mainly saw it coming from abroad.
Now, after the nutty charge by Robert Welch that Eisenhower had a communist pro-Moscow agenda, he was famously repudiated in the pages of the National Review by William F. Buckley, Jr.
First, of course, the Birch Society was thoroughly repudiated by the mainstream media. And then Buckley goes after originally Welch himself and then the entire John Birch Society. And Buckley's objective was to establish what he called a responsible right. The right as solidly conservative but not extremist, and that was extremely important in marginalizing the John Birch Society.
Now, the schism between mainstream conservatism and the Birch Society came into play in the 64 presidential race. Barry Goldwater ran against Lyndon Johnson, and he counted the John Birch Society as a vast part of his constituency.
On the one hand, and this was true of the entire conservative movement, they needed the grassroots energy of the John Birch Society. They needed the grassroots followers, but they could not openly embrace the John Birch Society. So Goldwater says, you know, we're not going to have any society members involved in our campaign. But of course, behind the scenes, John Birch leaders and members are very much involved in helping Barry Goldwater. They didn't help him all that much, of course. He suffered one of the worst landslide defeats in U.S. history, in part because people believed he was, to some extent, akin to the extremists in the John Birch Society. He could never quite shake that association, no matter what he said.
Now, the John Birch Society still seems obsessed with the idea of losing American sovereignty, if not to the Red Menace, to whom? The United Nations?
Absolutely. This has been one of the most fundamental themes of the John Birch Society. Really, throughout the history of conservatism, there has been great fear about the loss of American sovereignty to international organizations, be it the UN or be it the Bilderbergers, a secretive organization of international financiers. And it really doesn't matter what the specific enemy might be it communists or be it Islamic terrorists. In the view of the John Birch Society, this is all part of a bigger plot to create a one-world government that makes us slaves to a few small conspirators.
In 2008, is the Birch Society just an American version of European nationalism along Le Pen, Zhirinovsky, Schechel, Jörg Haider lines? Or is there something uniquely American about this worldview?
I think there is something uniquely American about this worldview, this idea of American exceptionalism. The civilization built by the American pioneers is the world's greatest civilization, and we've got to do everything possible to protect it from external enemies who want to destroy American civilization and submerge us into some kind of sinister international organization. That's as American as apple pie.
Alan, thank you so much.
My great pleasure.
Alan Lichtman is professor of history at American University and author of White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement. As we said, the John Birch Society is 50 years old this week and counting. The Society's current president is John McManus. I asked him if the John Birch Society is now, as some suggest, a mere shadow of the organization it was in the early 60s.
Not at all. Not at all. But the media has ignored us, and consequently a lot of people think that we went out of business. We continue to quietly undermine the establishment. When the media was blasting us, as they certainly did in the early 60s, calling us every nasty name you could possibly think of, the society was growing. And I guess some people discovered that that was the case, and so then the attitude got passed around, let's ignore them. And the ignoring began probably around 65, 66, and it has pretty much continued ever since.
50 years ago, the John Birch Society was on the front lines of the battle against international communism. That war is over. The Soviet Union collapsed. Our society managed to survive intact. How is the society relevant in 2008?
Well, you make a mistake in thinking that the John Birch Society was formed only to oppose communism. It was formed to oppose any form of totalitarianism and to promote the American system, constitutional limited government. So we were opposed always to communism, but also to fascism, socialism, Nazism, princes, potentates, dictators, kings, whatever.
As prominent as the John Birch Society became in the 60s, we've just finished talking to a historian who believes that it was at its heart an extremist movement. Is there any part of your history that you wish to disclaim?
Oh, no. Oh, no. When the society was founded in 1958, Robert Welsh predicted that there would be wild inflation of the currency. He predicted huge deficits. He predicted a huge bureaucracy growing out of Washington, D.C. And all of those things have come to pass. We are for less government. We are for more responsibility among governments and individuals and even businesses. We believe that combination with God's help will lead to a better world. If that makes us extreme, then people should realize how far the country has departed from its roots.
At the risk of sounding argumentative, I just simply have to observe that those largest deficits occurred during the Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush administrations.
Well, that doesn't surprise us.
Yeah, tell me why that fits into your worldview.
First of all, the goal of what we consider to be a conspiracy is to build a world government. Now, you can't have a world government if you have a wealthy United States merging with countries that are third world. And so we believe that the plan all along has been to bring America down, have America finance other countries to bring them up so that we could be comfortably merged into a one world government. The New World Order is what it has been called for many, many years.
What's the solution?
The solution is to get back to the Constitution. And if you go to the Constitution, you will find no authorization for federal aid, for federal involvement in housing, education, welfare, medicine, transportation, and all of the alphabet agencies that are regulating America and driving American businessmen out of business.
If 50 years into your history, a presidential candidate made an address to the John Birch Society, that would end his or her campaign instantaneously. Would it be better for you to be regarded enough as in the mainstream that you were not radioactive, or is it better for your continued life to remain on the fringe?
Well, you're asking us to be pragmatists rather than people who are standing for principle. We are not going to be pragmatists. We are going to continue to stand for principle. And we're finding that many more Americans want that and admire it. And it will filter down, so pretty soon candidates for office will be doing the same thing. There are candidates for office who call us and want to know if we can help them get elected. And we tell them, look, we don't back candidates. We don't nominate candidates. You go out and speak like a member of the Birch Society, the Birchers will find you.
John, thank you very much for joining me.
Well, fine. Any of your listeners interested, they can go to jbs.org on the internet, and you can find out all about our radioactivity.
John McManus is president of the John Birch Society.
Do you want Justice Warren to be your commissar?
Do you want Mrs. Khrushchev in there with a D.A.R.? You cannot trust your neighbors or even next of kin. If mommy is a commie, then you gotta turn her in.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.